Okay, let's turn now to kids' television. There's actually a whole class, I believe, offered through Radio TV Film on kids' television that's really interesting, and I would recommend you take it if you find that you're interested in this area. But this slide is all I'm going to get to give you for purposes of time for this class. And isn't she adorable? Makes me almost want to have kids. The bottom line law here is Children's Television Act of 1990. And it says that, basically, broadcasters must serve the educational needs of kids. Lately, the FCC has been reviving it, revamping it a little bit to give it some additional teeth. Bottom line, there are a couple of rules in kids' television. The maximum commercials that should be done during kids' program is 10.5 minutes per hour on weekends, 12.5 minutes per hour on weekdays. So in other words, they don't want children's programming to be one commercial after another, because kids can't really differentiate what's entertainment and what's actually trying to sell them something. There have also been some revamping on some subsequent regulations, all right? There were a lot of different TV shows that were riffs off toys. So, for example, Power Rangers. Power Rangers coupled with Power Ranger cartoons, little kids can't make the distinction. You know, you have to have program length. You know, if you're going to actually have to have a commercial, it's only got to be 30 seconds or 15 seconds or whatever. You cannot really have a program length cartoon that results in your message being by Power Rangers. So there are some limited interaction between content and advertising, like a limitation on having advertisements for the products that might be featured in the programming. So you can't sell Power Rangers toys as often during a Power Rangers cartoon, for example. And they really did refine that what was actually considered to be educational. There were some broadcasters who were saying, yeah, Flintstones teaches kids about archaeology. No, it really doesn't. It's a comedy, all right? It does not teach children anything about archaeology. Now, admittedly, some children's programming, the stuff that I can stomach to watch, because most children's programming I just can't. Sesame Street is okay because it builds in, you know, smart little jokes for the adults who are watching. But stuff like Barney makes me want to, like, poke sharp sticks in my eye. My grandma used to just go crazy on Barney. She just thought it was awful. Right, but by and large, Barney and the Wiggles, they do teach kids some things, like, you know, sharing, and Sesame Street is great for teaching numbers, etc. Flintstones, however, doesn't teach archaeology. Power Rangers, frankly, doesn't really teach kids teamwork. Hate to tell you. Right? Now, they amended again massively in 1996 and provided more specific guidelines on educational programs, like the Flintstones issue. More importantly, they said, stations that provide an average of 3 hours a week of truly educational programming can get a quick license renewal. 3 hours a week is not very much. People who are advocates of kids' television say that that should be doubled or tripled or quadrupled. I mean, really, 3 hours a week is nothing. You can get that on Saturday morning, and that's how most of them do it, is they pack some of their stuff either early in the morning before mom and dad get up, or they pack it in on Saturday morning. Okay, so Children's Television Act provides the foundation. The amendment says the 3 hours, the max commercials, and those other limitations are part of it as well. Again, I'm giving it very small shrift here, and if you're interested, there's a whole class in Radio TV Film you can take. Okay, let's talk about the V-chip. The V-chip is a little piece of technology that is in any now new TVs you buy that are 13 inches or larger. It provides technology to block programs that have certain objectionable content. Now, the Telecommunications Act did not set up the rating system, didn't. But it said to the broadcasters, you need to create a system, and if you don't, Congress will do it for you. The broadcaster says, okay, we'll do it. And they did. They set up a rating system. The original rating system that was established in 1997 looked a lot like the MPAA rating system for movies. All right? There were six categories at the time. You can take a look at them, Y7, Young, G, PG, 14, etc. Right? Now, they determined that that really didn't work as well as they would have liked, and then they started doing another set of ratings. Okay? There was no way to tell what the content was. It was an aged-based thing. All right? And now there are some codes, V for violence, fantasy violence, language, etc., etc. Okay? Now, you don't have to know those, but you should know that those exist. 15 seconds at the start of all shows that are rated, there's a little flasher in the corner, and usually programs will show it a couple of times, and it shows the rating plus the little age code. Okay? Now, everything has to be rated on programming except for news programs, sports programs, and movies that are already rated by the MPAA that are shown on Showtime, HBO, etc. Okay? So essentially, the V-chip is there. Now, I can tell you that in all the times I've taught this class, there are probably under a dozen families who actively use the V-chip that's in their television. Most people, I played with mine a little. I'm afraid to play with it too much because I'm afraid I'll lose the password and then I'll end up like having to listen to Barney because I'll put it on the wrong setting and I won't be able to get out of it. But that said, most families tend not to use it. There are some, but most families tend not to use it, and some people have considered this to be a big wash. But it's still the law, it's still good law, and it's still being built into every television set for which you are paying a little bit extra. Okay, let's talk about cable TV. We've been talking primarily so far in this chapter about broadcast television and radio, that is the free over-the-air stuff. I want to talk now a little bit about regulation of cable. There are a couple of laws, Cable Communications Policy Act of 84 and the Telecom Act, all right? But the one I want to focus on primarily is called the Cable Television Consumer Protection and Competition Act of 1992. I will simply call it the Cable Act of 1992. And it had five major rules. First, it mandated that the FCC institute reasonable rates for cable. Second, that the FCC sets up standards for reception quality and customer service issues so that if you have a problem, you have somebody you can reach and you have to have a certain level of reception. Here, we don't have too much trouble with that. Third, the cable stations were to license their content to satellite providers. There's been some law about how that has been working, but don't worry about that. Fourth, cable companies are supposed to pay over-the-air stations that are not previously paid. And fifth, most importantly, cable companies were supposed to have the option to be carrying ABC, NBC, CBS, Fox, and PBS, the big five, as part of their basic package called the must-carry rule. Okay? And that is the question that's at issue in the Turner cases, the must-carry rule. Let me explain. That's Ted Turner there. Ted Turner, when he saw this law, says, "I really don't like must-carry. I think must-carry is an unconstitutional restriction on my ability to provide the stations that I want to on my cable systems." Okay? Intermediate scrutiny gets applied. The rule is said to be content neutral and thus constitutional. Turner doesn't like this, so he appeals to the Supreme Court, which takes the case Turner Broadcasting System versus FCC, Turner 1, I'll call it. Okay? In Turner 1, the court says, "Cable does deserve some First Amendment protection, but, quote, the must-carry rules on their face impose burdens and confer benefits without reference to the content of speech and are thus content neutral." Now, we learned back in Chapter 3 that content neutral requirements were usually constitutional, and that is true here. The court said, yeah, they're constitutional, they're content neutral, but we have another question. Does local broadcasting really need the protection of the must-carry rules? We know that they're content neutral. We know that they're constitutional. But are they necessary? So the court remanded it back to the lower court. And 3 years later, we get Turner 2, 1997. Justice Kennedy, the gentleman at the bottom, looks at the district court findings, which says the must-carry rules are necessary. Why? Well, frankly, when you bring home your cable or your new TV and you plug it in before you've plugged in cable or satellite, some of those broadcast stations are pretty fuzzy. I don't know about you, but I would rather watch a clear station than a fuzzy station. So if I had a choice and my broadcast stations were coming in fuzzy because they weren't carried on my cable package, I would watch something else. And that was the concern. The concern was free broadcast stations coming in fuzzy are not going to survive. Most families do have cable or satellite. The last numbers I've seen are in the 80 percentile. And frankly, the district court said, These must-carry rules don't have very little impact on cable companies. So, the Supreme Court says we agree. Protecting non-cable households from loss of the free broadcast TV is a substantial government interest. Therefore, the government can regulate to mandate must-carry or something like it, even though there is some First Amendment protection. Okay? The court wrote, "The record contains substantial evidence to support Congress's conclusion that enactment of must-carry was justified by a real threat to local broadcasting's economic health. Therefore, must-carry rules stick." Bottom line, Turner 1 says the must-carry rules are content-neutral and constitutional. Turner 2 says they're content-neutral, constitutional, and necessary. Therefore, Ted Turner, go home. All right? Bottom line, we have them. Now, do we have satellite must-carry? Not yet. If I had to lay money in my lifetime, you know, in the next 10 years I'm teaching this, when I'm 10 years older and you guys are all media professionals, all right, I'll be saying we have satellite must carry too. Because as more and more households get satellite, the issue will become more and more pressing for these local stations. Okay. Now, let's talk a little bit about indecency on cable. Now, we know that we buy cable television so that we should be able to see indecency, frankly, anytime we want. However, there have been some movements to modify, to do a little bit of regulation of indecency on cable. The Denver Area Educational Telecommunications Consortium versus FCC case has a mouthful to say and also very, very difficult to understand. Essentially, it was a question of whether or not cable operators could ban material on commercial lease channels if they wanted to. In other words, they could block Playboy Channel, etc. All right? The case said, yes, you can ban those stations if you want to. You don't have to provide access to those. But if you do, you cannot segregate them all on one channel or require viewers to request unblocking. Can you imagine calling up your cable company saying, yes, I want the Playboy channel to be able to come to you? You know, most people aren't going to want to do that. That's an unconstitutional restriction on people's ability to see indecent content. Nor can cable companies censor explicit content on either public access, educational, or government channels. Okay? Bottom line, I very rarely test on this case, but the bottom line is that you cannot segregate these channels, these patently offensive stuff on one channel and require the viewers to request unblocking. Okay? However, you will see this case, I promise you, on your final exam, and that's the Playboy case. Let me tell you a little story. I was in early college. I was probably a freshman at the time. And I actually didn't get cable in my household, my parents' household, until I was in college. But my little brother, who's 7 years younger than I am, was still in high school, well, actually in junior high, when I first started college. Okay, so I come home from college one day, and I get up in the middle of the night to get a glass of water. And my little brother is in the living room. We only had one TV at the time. Now my parents have a TV, I think, in every room. And frankly, we have several in our household. My little brother was sitting in front of the television set, and there was sort of static on the television set, and he's sitting 3 inches from the television set and sort of rocking back and forth with his eyes squinched. And I said, "Stephen, what are you doing?" And he jumps up. I startled him because it was 2 o'clock in the morning, and he said, "Janelle, there's pornography there. There are people having sex there." And I'm like, "Oh." And sure enough, there are these ghosted images that you can see of these two people having sex. It was obviously some adult channel that hadn't been scrambled. Okay? I turned off the TV and sent my brother to bed. I was a naughty big sister. But that is called signal bleed. All right? It's an imperfect scrambling of a signal. Now, you might see this sometimes on some of your other channels, that if you don't have a complete blocking system, you might sometimes see ghosting of a channel, or you might be able to hear some sound. The Communications Decency Act, that was part of the Telecom Act, had said that adult programming had to be 100% scrambled. In other words, my brother should have been able to see no ghosting or sounds. Okay? Or it had to only be put on during safe harbors. Now, in that case, my brother would have been fine because it was 2 o'clock in the morning. And we know safe harbors are 10 to 6. Okay? But Playboy Entertainment was not very happy about this. Why? Well, if you were Playboy and the government suddenly said you can only sell your programming between 10 o'clock at night and 6 o'clock in the morning, you'd be like, WTF. If somebody wants to buy my programming and watch it at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, shouldn't I be able to sell it and make money that way? If you can only show your indecent programming during half of the day, you can only reasonably charge half the cost. So Playboy sued and said, look, other companies, you know, it doesn't make any sense. If you're paying for this, you should be able to get it whenever you want. And the Supreme Court agreed. Said adult programming is just fine during the daytime, even if you've got this ghosting signal bleed going on. Okay? Subscribers, said the Supreme Court, can request an additional blocking device that will completely make those channels black. There's no sound and just a black screen if there's a concern for kids. The court looked at the numbers and said fewer than 1% of all subscribers bothered to get that blocking box. Parents had greeted this development with a yawn, said the court. If parents are not concerned about little kids seeing some signal bleed, we're not going to, you know, mandate that Playboy and other adult channels only broadcast their stuff during safe harbor hours. So bottom line, even if not 100% of signal bleed is eliminated, adult programming can be shown anytime you want. Okay? And that is the end of the chapter.